Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
That's right. It's time once again for Baptist Basics University. I am Matthew Gage, and today we will be doing our third lesson in our Bible survey series. And this one has the potential to be a monster. This one, I forgot I was going to look up and see what the longest lesson I have, the longest lesson I've done, and see, you know, what my record is. I know it's over an hour, not very much over an hour, but this one, because of how much ground we're going to have to cover, I've got a feeling this one's going to go close to, if not longer than an hour. I'm going to do my best to fly through this, but I want to cover it as concisely as possible, but I want to make sure that I get the information across and that, you know, you get a good understanding of what is going on. As in this lesson, we cover the Old Testament historical books. Now, there's not a tremendously a lot of difference, I guess, if you want to just have a broad definition of historical books between even what happens, say, in the book of Exodus, from these books. Well, this division is very broad, but most people, when they're doing like a Bible survey, will group these books together because they are just historical in nature. And then they'll separate Moses' books out just because of the one author of them and the one united story. Plus, you have books like Leviticus that just, it's not a lot of history in there. Well, these books we're going to cover today are just about all history. And in fact, we're going to be covering a lot of history, almost 1,000 years of Israel's history in this lesson. So we have 12 books to cover. We'll be covering from the book of Joshua on through the book of Esther. And as I say, this is a lot of time. It's a lot of ground to cover, a lot of different governmental structures, a lot of different people that have conquered the nation of Israel, a lot of different kings, a lot of different rulers. And we just don't have time to cover it all. This really... Now, when you get into more theological books, if you like the book of Romans or something, it's really a shame that we don't have time to go in verse by verse and chapter by chapter and deal with stuff. Well, in this case, too, it really is a shame I can't take more time, but I don't want to get bogged down because I'd love to go in and especially when we get into like the kings of Israel, let's spend some time and talk about each one. Whereas in this lesson, basically all I'm going to do is say, you know, chapters 15 through 20, that's just the kings of Israel. And we're just going to fly right by. And we're not going to talk about, you know, interesting little people like Ahab. And we're just going to be running right on through there. So I'm going to apologize up front. But like I said, my goal in this Bible survey series is just to give you a good basis, a good general understanding of what the Bible is, what the Bible is talking about. And as we fly through these historical books, I want you to just understand what each book is, what each book covers, and give you a good understanding of where it fits in the history of the nation of Israel. Now, I thought about this, and I thought about just jumping in and following the course of events in the history of Israel, and just following it as we go through, because really it stays pretty chronological up until you get into Esther and Nehemiah and Ezra. But what I want to do just to kind of cover the ground is to give you a brief outline of Israel's history that's covered during this time period. Now, the first thing will be the conquest and settlement of Canaan under Joshua. Now, you'll remember where we left off in the Pentateuch, where we left off in the book of Deuteronomy, is that the nation of Israel is ready to pass over into the land of Canaan, to claim it as their own. and Moses passes away. Joshua ascends as the new leader, and they're ready. They're just almost there, ready to cross the Jordan and go into the Promised Land. Well, that's where we're going to pick up, and that conquest and settlement of Canaan is going to cover from about 1451 to 1410 BC. After Joshua and the people after him, the next generation of people influenced by him, after they pass away, there is a time period where Israel is ruled by what are called judges. And these are men, and in one case a woman, that God moves on their heart, and the Spirit comes on them. They are able, like in the case of Samson, to do miracles. But anyway, during this time, the nation of Israel is slipping back into idolatry. They slip then into captivity and oppression by different different regional groups. And then a judge would rise up and lead them back into freedom and get them back on the right path. And there's this vicious little cycle that takes place there. We'll talk about when we get there. But this period is not real long. It's about 400 years. It's 1410 to about 1050 BC. So, of course, then after the judges go out, we have the prophet Samuel comes on the scene. And the next big event is in about 1050 BC, the establishment of the Jewish monarchy, the first king being Saul, and he's anointed in about 1050 BC. Now, he rules for about 40 years. King David rules for about 40 years. Solomon rules for about 40 years. And so for about 120 years there, we have a very united nation of Israel. The next key event is going to be in 960 BC. That's when the temple was built by Solomon. That's a major milestone event. The first temple is constructed. Now, after Solomon dies, his son, there's basically a civil war breaks out. The kingdom then splits into two. The kingdom of Israel in the north, which is really the bulk of the land and the people. And then the kingdom to the south, which is the kingdom of Judah. Judah's capital is Jerusalem. Israel's capital is Samaria. Israel, the kingdom of Israel basically has no good kings. The kingdom of Judah has a bunch of good kings, and God's really more with the kingdom of Judah than it is with the kingdom of Israel. There's prophets to the kingdom of Israel, but there's just not the revivals and things that happen. Even the Jewish religion splits. And, you know, the people in Judah have the temple, they have Jerusalem, and they basically carry on with the true Jewish faith. Well, part of what happens in the split is a second temple is even established in Samaria at Mount Gerizim. And so there's even a fracture even in the Jewish faith, and they're even warring against each other. Sometimes they're allies in other wars, but basically you have to treat them. The nation of Israel is two kingdoms and are not united during this time. Now, the next big event is the nation of Israel, the kingdom of Israel, is conquered by the Assyrian Empire. That's not Syrian, that's the Assyrian Empire, A-S-S-Y, RIA, and that takes place in about 723 BC. Now, the kingdom of Judah continues on a little bit longer, and they are conquered by the Babylonians in 586 BC, and the temple is destroyed at this time. And then the kingdom of Israel, when they go into captivity to Assyria, they basically disappear for a lot of various historical reasons. But if you ever hear people talk about trying to find the lost tribes of Israel, it goes back to trying to figure out what happened to the northern kingdom of Israel, because they don't have the identity or the presence that they once did. Now, excuse me. The Judah and the other remnants of Israel, when they're conquered by the Babylonians, eventually they are allowed to return, and that's what we're covered towards the end with the last few books that we'll cover in this lesson. But they are allowed to return, mostly under the Persian Empire. The Medo-Persian Empire conquers the Babylonian Empire, and they're a lot more lenient towards local people. And it's very interesting how these different kingdoms handle these captives. Assyria will resettle people and basically try to marry them off and lose their identity. The Babylonians will let you have your own identity, but they'll take you out of your land. So there's a less of a sense of identity, and they'll resettle you somewhere else. And that's basically what happened, is they took the kingdom, the Israelites, the Jewish people out of Judah, and would, settled them throughout their empire, but they weren't allowed to go back to their land. And finally, they're allowed to return, as I say, mostly under the Medo-Persian Empire, and basically as like a client state of the Persian Empire, they are allowed to regain a lot of their identity, and that's the Persians allowed that in how they dealt with their captive people. So they allowed them to return to their land, rebuild the temple, rebuild the walls around Jerusalem, which is a big thing because that's walls are a defensive deal, and basically, the Jews could have just said, hey, you know what, we're independent again, we're our own nation, and we've got a walled city, come and try to conquer us, it's going to be hard. So that's a big step in trust that the Persians showed to the Jewish people, but that's a pretty brief overview of what's going on in this historical books. And basically that is the story of the history of the nation of Israel in the Old Testament period post Moses. The prophets that we'll deal with later, the poetical books that we'll deal with in our next lesson, basically all that stuff is written during this time period at different points, at different points in the history. A lot of the prophets that are like post kingdom split or even in the captivity, and so all that's going to be in a later part of this history. But basically everything that is written, Proverbs, of course, written by Solomon, it's going to fit in here and things like that. But basically everything in the rest of the Old Testament fits into this historical outline at some point. So now we've covered the history, and I giving you a good kind of mental picture of what's going on, and so you understand where things will be going, let's jump right on in and let's start going through book by book. Now we have 12 different books to cover. I've kept to pretty much the same outline that I used in the previous lesson. We'll have authors, dates of writing, the time covered by the book, a subject for the book. I have key verses for some of the books. Some of them just don't lend themselves to having key verses, especially when you get in just chronicling the kings of, of Israel and Judah. There's just not really a big theme to the book. It's just preserving the history. So, there's not really a big overview overriding theme to the book. So there's not really a key verse that illustrates that, but we'll have key verses for especially some of these first books that we'll have. We'll also have, a brief outline. I think the longest one I have is about 4 points of each book. And then, if possible, and in some cases I didn't do this, I have the events to remember like we used, just to give you an idea of what's going on in the book. If you can associate these events with this book, you'll understand what is happening, what this book is about. Now, in some of the books, especially like First and Second Chronicles, there just wasn't really a good way to do it, and we'll deal with that later. So I don't have that in a couple of cases. I just want to let you know up front. So let's jump right on in, and we'll deal with the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua was written somewhere around 1400 BC. It covers the time period between 451 BC and 1410 BC, about 40 years or so. The subject of the book of Joshua is the conquest of the land of Canaan. It is the story about how Joshua leads the people into the land, they conquer the land, and then they settle the land and divide the land and disperse it among the 12 tribes. Now, a key verse, there's a pretty good key verse dealing with Joshua and his role in his ministry. That's chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, and thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. So basically that's Joshua's commission, and it kind of outlines what he's going to do. He talks about, you know, dividing the land and God being with him and protecting him. Don't be discouraged, you know. But that's the overlying theme, is we see the leadership of Joshua and what happens. An outline of this book, first chapters 1 through 12, deal with conquering the land. We have the battles of, you know, Jericho and Ai, defeating all the various kings in the land. Chapters 13 through 22 is dividing the land, and that's kind of the drier part of the book, but basically the main thing that's going on at that point is just saying, okay, you know, from this point to this point to this point, that area right over there, that is for the tribe of Dan, and this is for the tribe of Benjamin, and there's a little bit of other stuff mixed in there, but that's basically what's going on. And then finally, the last couple chapters are Joshua's final days. It's a kind of a final message and challenge to the people. A couple of events to remember. Probably the most famous event in the book of Joshua is the Battle of Jericho. That's in chapter 6, so that's a good one to remember. The next one I'd say to remember is just a single verse that is the most quoted out of this book. And that's Joshua's challenge in chapter 24, verse 15, to the people, where he says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." So that's another thing, you know, you probably want to remember is in this book, because essay, it is the most quoted verse in this book. Okay, now let's say if we progress historically, Joshua passes off the scene. For the next generation, things go pretty good. And then we have the period of Judges. And the Judges are the book of Judges. We don't know who wrote it. I don't know. Did I talk about who wrote the book of Joshua? Joshua was probably written by Joshua, at least for the most part. So that's what people generally believe. The book of Judges was not written by Judges, okay, or a man named Judges. We don't know who wrote it. Speculation is, and a good guess, if we're just going to have to pick somebody, would be Samuel, that he would have written this. And the time covered would be about, it was written about 1050 B.C., and it covers a period of almost 400 years, about 1410 BC from the passing of Joshua to 1050 BC. And the subject of the book, it's the history of the nation of Israel during this time period and of the 12 judges that rule. So it's this period in between Joshua and Samuel. And this is a very dark time, perhaps the darkest time in the nation of Israel. There's a lot of confusion. there's a lot of weird things that happen in the book of Judges, and some of these weird things even happen in the name of the Lord. There is some very, very strange things. This really serves to illustrate, I guess you could say, the depravity of man, that even the nation of Israel that had the truth would fall away and turn against God, and you know, would have to be revived, would have to be saved through the work of of a judge. And there's this vicious cycle that takes place where the nation's doing pretty good, then they fall away into idolatry, and then God sends a neighboring kingdom or people to conquer them, to punish them, to reprove them, and that they will be servants and captives of these other people for a few years until they start to turn back to the Lord, and then God would raise up a person known as a judge to lead them back into freedom and to rule over them. And as I say, there's 12 judges that are listed. Gideon being perhaps one of the more famous, and Samson, of course, but you can go in. There's a bunch of other ones. Some of them just take up a few verses. Some of them take up a few chapters. Now, there is a key verse for this book, and that is chapter 21, verse 25. It says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes." And that really is the state of affairs. There's a lot of just a lot of just confusion, I guess. And as I say, there was no moral authority even with the Jewish religion. People were still just doing as they pleased. And that's the sadness of the book of Judges, is that in spite of God working and raising up these men and miraculously delivering his people time and time again, they still didn't learn and still just did their own thing and did not seek the Lord. Okay, an outline of the book, chapters 1 and 2 is the causes of the decline, just talks about some of the sins they got into. Chapters 3 through 16 is this vicious cycle I've been talking about, so cycles of oppression. And then chapters 17 through 21 is the outline I'm borrowing this from. I can't remember if this is J. Vernon McGee or another book I'm using. Talked about characteristic sins, and this is where you get into some really weird stories that happen, and just kind of showing the state of affairs in the nation, and it's not pretty. Some events to remember: we'll just look at the rule of a couple of judges. Gideon, was raised up, didn't know if he wanted to even do it, and had to continually, put the fleece out, and how, his 300 men conquered. That's chapters 6 through 8. And then Samson, of course, that was the strongest man in the Bible, and the things that he did. That's chapters 14 through 16. Okay, the next book is the book of Ruth. Now, the book of Ruth was most likely written by Samuel. That's generally what I've seen, is that it's attributed to Samuel. It was written somewhere around 1050 BC, shall we say. The time covered, it's kind of have to take a little bit of a guess here, but probably 1322 to 1312 BC. So this takes place during the time of the judges and the rule. The subject of this, and I did not actually type it in there, the subject of this is the basically how a Moabitish girl got into the lineage of King David and Christ. So we have basically what is a heathen girl, and how she ends up marrying a Jew. And as I say, if you want to go and look at the genealogies of Christ in Matthew and in Luke, you will see that Ruth is there. And it's an amazing little book, very beautiful picture of God's grace towards people. The key verses of it are chapters 1, let's see, verse 16 and 17. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee," talking to Naomi. "For whither thou goest, I will go, and whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." Okay. Outline of the book, chapter 1 is in Moab. That's how Elimelech and his wife Naomi leave Bethlehem to go to the land of Moab because of a famine. How they're there, their sons marry, and then all the men die. And Naomi goes to return back to Bethlehem, and Ruth follows with her. Chapter 2 is in the fields of Boaz. They're very poor. They're gleaning the fields. And Ruth goes out to glean, which basically is to pick up the leftovers after, you know, the harvesters had gone through the fields, and happens to be upon the field of Boaz, who is a near kinsman who can, you know, redeem her, be the kinsman redeemer, and marry her, and, you know, basically secure and prolong the lineage and estate of Elimelech through her. And, you know, Boaz falls in love with her. Chapter 3 is at the threshing floor of Boaz, kind of where it all comes together. And like, okay, we're going to get, let's get married. But, oh, wait, we can't quite yet. And then chapter 4 is how it all finally comes out. And then kind of the end of the story, and is how this ties in, and how Ruth would be, was it the great-great-grandmother of King David. So there you go. That's the book of Ruth. If there's an event to remember, I'd say go with chapter 2 and with Ruth gleaning in the field. I know that's, you know, kind of following with my outline, but I'd say if you remember Ruth gleaning in the field, in the field of Boaz, you kind of get a good picture of what the book is about and what's going on. Okay, now we're going to get into a group of 6 books that are going to be a little bit fun to carry, to cover. 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and 1 and 2 Chronicles. Now, I believe in the Jewish Bibles, these are not split. They're actually just Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. And 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings really are one continuing narrative. And then the book of Chronicles is just covering a lot of the same material of those 4 books, just covering the same history. So some of this overlaps, but a lot of this is, it's just, these 6 books is just the history of the kings of Israel and Judah. Now, 1 Samuel, we're going to say it was written around 1050 BC, covers a time period of around 1171 to 1056 BC. We don't know who the author is, because the book of Samuel goes beyond the life of Samuel, so we're not sure who wrote this. Now, the subject of the book of 1 Samuel is the foundation of the monarchy through Saul and the rise of David. The outline of the book, chapters 1 through 7, we have the ministry of Samuel. Chapters 8 through 15, we have the reign of King Saul, which lasted about 40 years. And then beginning in chapter 16 through the end of the book, chapter 31, Saul is still king, but we see David becoming really the more preeminent figure. And we have, you know, Saul trying to kill David and different events that take place during this time. So this is the early, early history of the Jewish monarchy here. And basically we just covered, really all during the reign of King Saul, but but we see David coming onto the scene towards the end. Probably the key event to remember, I'd say, from this is chapter 17, and that's the story of David and Goliath. It's because David's not king yet, but he's stepping in, and it's really where he comes into a lot of, you know, national preeminence there is after the defeat of Goliath. 2 Samuel. Once again, we don't know who the author is. We're going to say it's written around 1050 BC, which actually that does not work because this covers way past that. I'll have to change that. But that's part of the fun I sat down and worked on these notes about three or four different times. I missed that. But it has to be, the time covered is 10:56 to 10:17. So it has to be after 10:17. So it has to be a different date. I'll try to correct that before I put the notes out. Now this book, 2 Samuel, basically it covers the reign of King David and just focuses on him, on his men, his actions. Now, a lot of this is not glowing. We'll have, you know, David and Bathsheba. We'll have the rebellions, of some of his sons. And, you know, this is not with David really being the premier king, you'd expect a really glowing story. But a lot of this book is talking about, you know, the mistakes of David and, you know, the results of them. First of all, chapters 1 through 10, we see David's triumphs. Chapters 11 through 21, we start seeing David's troubles, and that begins with David and Bathsheba. Then lastly, the book will kind of summarize and tie a big bow around the coverage of David's reign and talk about David's achievements in chapters 22 through 24. And it talks about him, you know, as a writer, it just kind of summarizes his life and his works. A couple of key things that happen in this book to remember. First of all, chapter 7 is what's called the Davidic Covenant. And David wanted to build the temple. God prohibited him from doing it. But God gave him this promise that, you know, his line would stay and rule over the nation of Israel. And this is important. It establishes, you know, the kingdom. It's also important when you deal with Christ and his lineage that basically Christ has to come through David's line because of this covenant, and that Christ is the fulfillment even of this promise, that because he will rule and reign forever, you know, and he is of the line of David. So very important chapter there. Chapter 11 is another key event to remember, and this is David and Bathsheba. This hopefully familiar with. This is where David has an affair with Bathsheba, the wife of one of his mighty men. Well, I'd like to think of his special ops soldiers, Uriah, and the results of that. How she comes up expecting a child, and David tries to cover it up, eventually has to have Uriah murdered, and the fallout from this is pretty major. David's life is not the same. There is fighting, especially inside his family. David's troubles go from being external to internal at this point, and this is the dividing line between that, and that's in chapter 11. All right, the book of 1 Kings. We don't know who wrote it. It was probably written around 550 BC. And the book of 1 Kings covers the period from about 1015 to 897 BC. This picks up right where 2 Samuel leaves off. It just the two books of Samuel, two books of Kings just continue the same narrative. So the time covered 1015 to 897 BC. The subject of this is the history of the kings of Israel and also Judah, part one. And really the book of 1 Kings, well, let's look at the outline. The first part of the book, chapters 1 through 11, deals with the reign of Solomon and the construction of the temple and the majesty and the power of his of the kingdom under him. This was the greatest area that was ruled by the nation of Israel, the most wealth by the nation of Israel. There's more trade and preeminence among the nations. This is the apex historically of the nation of Israel. And chapters 12 through 22 is dealing with the decline in the split of the kingdom. It's how the kingdom would split into the northern and southern kingdoms, and then the first rulers of those. So couple of key events to remember in this. Number one is the construction of the temple that takes place in chapters 5 through 8. It's just so important to the identity of the people of Israel, to their religion, that the temple is built. It's a very beautiful, very costly place, but it really is like them saying the temple replaced the tabernacle, which had still been in use from the time of the Exodus. So, I mean, for hundreds of years, they had just used the tabernacle, a tent. And now they're in their land, and basically this is them setting up a permanent home for their worship of God. And this is a very, very major thing. And that story, of course, is chapters 5 through 8. Another thing we'll just throw out there, because as I said, what happens in the book of 1 Kings, we have the kingdom splitting us under, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, I believe. And, you know, things turn south, and the nation really, both nations have their troubles in staying faithful to God. And just to illustrate how bad things get is our old buddy King Ahab, his wife Jezebel, show up in the end of this book. And so kind of remember what's going on. We also have the ministry of the prophet Elijah at the end of this book. So chapter 18 is the kind of iconic encounter with Elijah, where he challenges the prophets of Baal to a contest about praying and fire falling from heaven and consuming a sacrifice. And it's really kind of the ultimate challenge against the idolatry and against that the nation had fallen into. So that's chapter 18. And if you remember that's in this book, that kind of gives you an idea of how far the nation has slipped in such a short period of time, and how far even the kings have digressed and fallen off the examples that they've been given before. Now, it's not that David and Solomon were perfect. They had their faults. The Bible records their faults. And even Saul, to a large extent, he had his faults, but he reigned for 40 years and established the kingdom, and appears in a lot of ways to have been a successful king. He gets a bad rap for opposing David and for his lack of complete obedience to God's commands. But still, I think you'd probably rather take Saul over Ahab or Omri or some of these other characters that pop up in this time period. So, but we really see how far the nation has fallen in such a short period of time that we have to have this kind of end-all battle, supposedly, between God and the false god Baal that has to take place there with Elijah. Okay. The book of 2 Kings. Once again, we don't know the author, probably written around 550 BC. The time covered in this is 896 BC to 588. There's not a lot of time devoted in this book to individual kings. The book of 1 Kings doesn't cover as much time because the first half of the book just deals with the 40-year reign of Solomon. Well, there's not that people don't reign for long periods of time. Some are very short, some a matter of days. But no large extent of this book is devoted to one king and what happens with them. So it covers a lot more history than the book of 1 Kings. 2 Kings, the history, the subject of it is just the history of the kings of Israel and Judah, part 2. It just continues this saga of the kings and the state of the nation and the prophets. It just continues going. But it all ends in this book. And we have in this book the fall of both kingdoms. Let's look at the outline of the book. the decline and fall of the kingdom of Israel, the northern kingdom. That's in chapters 1 through 17. We have them wrapped up, and then they're conquered by Assyria. And then we have the decline and fall of Judah, which takes a little bit longer, a few hundred years longer, until they finally have fallen away, so far away from God. But that's chapters 18 through 25. The key events to remember during this, we could pick out individual kings and things that happened, but I just want you to remember that in the book of 2 Kings, we have the fall of Israel to Assyria in chapter 17, and the fall of Judah to Babylon in chapter number 25. So this is the end of the independent state, of the independent kingdom of the nation of Israel in either of its, you know, either of its split kingdoms, the northern or southern kingdom. Both of them in, and the nation is in captivity by the end of this book. Okay, now let's get into the book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles. The book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles, I don't want to say it's a rehashing or a review of the same events. It's just another telling of the lives and reigns of the kings. Now, it does primarily focus on the kings of Judah, though. Some people will say that the book of 1st and 2nd Kings will focus more on the kings of the northern kingdom of the kingdom of Israel, and the book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles focus more on the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah. It's not really quite completely true, but the book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles do primarily focus on the kings of Judah, which, of course, they had Jerusalem, they had the temple, they had more good kings, they had more revivals, and lasted quite a bit longer because they stayed closer to God and stayed true to God and did not fall away into idolatry as quickly or as easily as the northern kingdom of Israel. The book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles are different also. Some people will say it's even God's perspective of what happens. For instance, you know, things like David and Bathsheba is not recorded in these books, because that was done away with, that was forgiven. And so some people say this is God's perspective. Now, you can make a very good case for that. And as we look at this, we'll see both of these books were written by Ezra. Ezra is such a major figure in the history of the nation of Israel, and he is so often disregarded. I mean, this guy is almost a second Moses in reestablishing the Jewish faith. Excuse me. Really, probably deserves. If you go to listing the major figures in Jewish history in the Old Testament, you of course have to go with Moses. Probably David second. Ezra is right up there with them, and we just kind of gloss over his career and what he did. Part of what he did, though, is writing these books. Now, we don't know exactly who wrote the book 1st and 2nd Chronicles, but it's most likely Ezra. And as a priest, he is trying to reestablish the religion in the heritage of the nation of Israel when they're being reestablished back in the land. So it would make sense that he would rewrite, not like revision, but to write again the history of the kings, of the nation, and preserve that for the people. So that's where the book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles, even though we're covering a lot of the same areas, and it's a great thing because you can cross-reference the two and you can see what one says and not the other. But you also have to realize the book of 1st and 2nd Chronicles is basically, you know, the four books, the two books of Samuel, two books of Kings are combined. All that time period is combined into 1st and 2nd Chronicles. So we have the same history covered in four books in two books. So a lot of it's going to go quite a bit faster. Okay, so let's jump in the book of 1st Chronicles. author, as I said, probably was Ezra. The date it was written, we'll just say 450 BC. The time covered. Now, this kind of makes it a little bit interesting to say exactly how to do this, because the first part of the book is genealogies from Adam all the way to David. So you could say the book begins at creation. But as far as when the real history really begins to take place is with the kings of Israel. So we can say 1015 BC, you know, when Saul becomes king. The subject of the book is the history of the kings of Judah, part one. And that's what's going on here. It's just the story of the kings of the people in this time period. Now, the outline of the book, the first thing we have is the genealogies, and that's chapters 1 through 10. And they are quite extensive and a lot of fun to read. Ha, ha, ha. But it's more than just one direct lineage. There's a lot of stuff. It's broken down, like into tribes and stuff. It's a very, very detailed. Now, this is part of the reason, you know, I think that these books were probably written by Ezra, and that's part of what he's trying to preserve are these bloodlines, are these genealogies of this heritage of the people, that it's written down, that it's preserved to give them a sense of who they were, where they've been, what they've done as a nation, and important for tracing the lineage of kings and such. So it's very important. The Jews, it was very important. Today, you know, listen, I probably can't go much more than 150 years or so back in my family's history, either way I want to go. In fact, in some cases, we've looked a little bit into it, and I don't know much past 100 years ago. But, you know, I've got some relatives that have done some research, and they've traced, you know, some of our family back into the Civil War and even back, you know, coming over into America. But, you know, that really is just a span of, you know, 300 years or so. And, you know, I'm not royalty or anything, but, you know, it's very difficult to trace those type of things. Well, here it is. It's preserved in these books, so that they know who they are, where they've been. And it's something they give a lot of importance, a lot of weight to. Okay. So we have genealogies, chapters 1 through 10. We have the reign of David, chapters 11 through 29, because David is, you know, the preeminent king. He is kind of the ideal king. He's probably the king, in spite of his faults and failures, he was a man after God's own heart, probably closer to God than any other king there was, and closer to the example of what a king should be. So there's a lot of time spent on him, on his men, on his administration, just showing kind of the might and power and majesty of the kingdom under David. Okay. Let's say I don't have key verses or anything for this, or even key events, because it's just covering the same time period. I could go in and just pick some story, you know, from the reign of David. But if you just want to remember genealogies and the reign of David, just kind of remember the outline. The book of 2 Chronicles, once again, probably was written by Ezra around 450 BC. This one will cover the time period between 1015 and 610 BC. So this one covers about 400 years of history. Subject is the history of the kings of Judah, part 2. And an outline of this book, we'll have the reign of Solomon, chapters 1 through 9. Of course, that's important. That's, you know, the height of the kingdom and the building of the temple. So that's very important to the Jews. And then chapters 10 through 36, we have the reigns of everybody else who followed as a king of Judah. And this book ends with Judah being taken captive by the Babylonians, but it also is interesting that there's a little tag at the end, just the last few verses in chapter number 36, where it goes forward, you know, it leaps 70 or 80 something years into past the Babylonian going into the captivity, and then talks about the Persian Empire. And it talks about how Cyrus, the king of Persia, made a proclamation saying that, basically talking about the allowing them to rebuild the temple, and that, said, the Lord his God be with him and let him go up, So it kind of ends with this message of hope that it's not all over, that, the nation is not just conquered and gone away and is going to be, slaves and captives to Babylon and be lost to history like so many other nationalities were during this time period by the Assyrians and the Babylonians. A lot of groups lost their identity. The Jews kept it. But it ends up with this kind of this hope, and which kind of leads into the final three historical books that we'll cover. But basically saying, look, it's not all over, and the kingdom is coming back. So it's kind of a neat way to wrap it up. Okay, so now we get to the final three historical books. And it looks like we're tracking right now to be about an hour. It's not quite the monster length lesson. I was afraid it was going to be, like an hour and a half long or something. But we'll probably, by the time we cover this, we probably ought to be close to an hour. All right, now these three books, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, all take place kind of during the captivity and the reestablishment of the nation of Israel back into their land. And it's the only history that we have really of this time period, and as far as the nation of Israel goes. And let's just jump on in. Well, I was going to say we could talk about it, but I'd end up just rehashing the information anyway when we were talking about the book. So the first book here, and this is not in precise chronological order, by the way, here. The book of Esther actually would take place kind of right in the middle of the book of Ezra. So, and the book of Nehemiah kind of overlaps with Ezra. Okay. The book of Ezra, the first book. The author probably was Ezra himself. That's kind of traditional. Written maybe 450 BC, somewhere around there. Okay, the time covered is 536 to 457 BC. And the subject of the book of Ezra is the rebuilding of the temple and reestablishing the Jewish faith. As I say, Ezra is a very, very key figure in the history of Israel. He's a priest, and he kind of leads and really leads in reestablishing the Jewish faith once they return to the land. He's an inspiration and a motivator into rebuilding the temple, though it really wasn't his project, because it's not called Ezra's temple or anything, but the second temple is, it may not have been built without Ezra. And then finally, through him, we have kind of the reestablishment of the Jewish faith. The book of the law is found. It's read to the people. And he reestablishes the Jewish faith. He also, if he wrote these books, which I've credited to him, First Set Chronicles, and probably even Nehemiah also, he really is preserving this history and this heritage and trying to pass it on. So Ezra really is I think you can think of him kind of as a second Moses. Is that Moses created, or not created, because he didn't, God gave it to him, but Moses established through Moses the nation, the religion, the identity of the nation of Israel was established. Through Ezra, it's reestablished, and after the Babylonian captivity. Well, let's look at the outline. Chapters 1 and 2 deal with the return of the Jews from captivity, and this takes place under the kingdom, the Persian, the Medo-Persian Empire. But the first couple chapters talks about how the Jews return to their land, and there's actually a few different groups that return different times, but this deals with them coming back to the land and trying to reestablish themselves there. And there's a lot of opposition takes place. There's new people that have been resettled there, and maybe local people who, you know, some of the Canaanite people who weren't moved out in, you know, through these captivities and stuff. So there's people there that are opposing them and what's going on. So there's a lot of opposition to what is taking place. And there are people that hate the Jews, as we'll see, that want to hinder or halt their work. So the Jews return, chapters 1 through 2. Chapters 3 through 6, we have the temple being rebuilt. And now it's nothing in the majesty or grandeur of Solomon's temple. I mean, this is a really, by comparison, it's very primitive by the accounts there. In fact, it talks about some people who had seen the previous temple weeping when they saw this one, because it just was not as big and beautiful as the first temple. Okay. Chapter 7 and 8 deal a little bit personally with what's going on with Ezra. He actually leaves and comes back in these chapters, and there's a big gap in between these chapters in the ministry of Ezra. But we'll just call that the return of Ezra. All right, chapters 9 and 10, we have revival of the people. And this is where we see that the nation is once again turning back to God after the captivity, after what's happened. They've got the temple. They have their identity. They have their religion, and they are really coming back to God and coming back and just having a national revival take place with them. The key event to remember in this, I'm just going to say, is chapter 6, when the temple is rebuilt. The main thing probably to remember, if you remember that Ezra helped rebuild the temple and had a big part in that, you kind of get a good idea of what he was about in reestablishing the Jewish religion. Okay, Nehemiah, he's the second shortest man in the Bible. So get it? Nehemiah? Ha ha ha, that's a dumb joke. And he's the second shortest because there's somebody else who is a shoe height. So anyway, the book of Nehemiah. Now, who wrote the book of Nehemiah? There are portions of it that are in the first person, so you could say Nehemiah wrote it. Kind of the theory that I've seen out there that makes some sense is that Ezra probably wrote it, you know, with the help of Nehemiah, or perhaps using Nehemiah's journals. In fact, Ezra and Nehemiah in the, I want to say in the Jewish Bible, is one book. It's just kind of stuck together as one narrative. So, it's very possible Ezra had a hand in writing or compiling this book. So if Ezra did it, we'll say 450 BC is a date that was written. And, I guess that won't work because that's another date I'll have to... Ezra wrote it and I copied and pasted some dates. I'll need to change that because, unfortunately, the time events covered here are after that. So we'll have to change that. A couple little mistakes. I was hurrying and rushing to get these notes done because I had a little window here to record. I didn't have time to really go back and proof some of this stuff. I should have. My apologies to you. You deserve far better than that. But I guess in a few cases here, you're getting what you pay for. It's free, and you're getting free quality here. So. But anyway, it was written sometime after the events of the time covered, 446 to 434 BC. And the main subject of this book, and the kind of the key thing Nehemiah is remembered for, is rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And so this is important for a lot of reasons. It really solidifies the nation back in their land. I mean, it's going to take an army and a siege to kick them out of their land again. Nobody can just come in, round them up, and take them out. So it really solidifies them in the land. That also shows a lot of trust by the Persian Empire to allow them to do this. They didn't allow just anybody to have walls. That's a major thing, even for centuries to come, is having walls around a city. And a punishment for a city could be tearing down the walls. And if a city was conquered, they would sometimes tear down the walls because it was such a strong fortification. And anyway, this is about rebuilding the walls around Jerusalem. An outline The book of Nehemiah is not, the outline does not fit with the chapter divisions very well. First thing we have is return of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, you know, having his heart broken over the state of Jerusalem and the desire to go back and how he's allowed to go back. That's chapter 1, you know, verse 1 through chapter 2, verse 11. Then we have the rebuilding of the walls and the opposition to it. Sanballat and Tobiah, especially, that oppose him. And that is chapters 2, verse 12 through chapter 7, verse 4. And then finally, we deal with reforming the nation. There's some problems that go on. It's kind of the same story that takes place with Ezra in some cases, that there's problems. We have priests marrying, foreign Gentile women, and there's issues. We even have enemies of the state living in the temple itself, in the temple complex. So there are big-time problems that have to be dealt with. And Nehemiah has the power to deal with it, and he does. So chapter 7, verse 5 through the end of chapter 13, which is verse 31. So that's what is happening there in the last part of the book. And so there's a couple little different things that go on there. Okay, major event to remember is that the walls were rebuilt and completed, and that's in chapter 6. So kind of if you remember, like I said, if you remember that Ezra is the rebuilding of the temple, Nehemiah is rebuilding the walls, you really get a good idea for what is going on in these books. And that's kind of the key event in both of these books. Okay, finally, the last one, the 12th book. We're almost done, minutes away from daylight. We have the book of Esther, which is probably the strangest book for a few reasons. in some cases in the Old Testament, especially historically. One of the few books in the Bible, you know, Ruth is named after a woman, Esther's named after a woman. We don't know who wrote it. Perhaps Esther's was Uncle Mordecai. We'll throw a date at 460 BC at the time it's written. It's the time covered is 521 to 509 BC. And the subject of this book is God's protection for his people. The book of Esther is kind of a strange book. It's how a Jewish girl becomes wife to the Persian king, becomes queen, and how she thwarts a plot to basically annihilate the Jews during that time. So it's an amazing book for that, for the history, for what happens. Also because the name of God is never mentioned in this book. As you read it, God's not mentioned. You know, God doesn't speak to people. They don't reference the law. God's not mentioned. The name of God is nowhere to be found in the book of Esther. I believe, if I remember right, that is the only book in the Bible that is that way. But nevertheless, even though he's not mentioned by name, we see his hand at work throughout this entire story. Okay, let's look at our outline. Chapters 1 and 2 is how Esther became queen, how the king, Ahasuerus, disposes of his queen Vashti. There's basically a beauty pageant to find the new queen. Esther wins that. She becomes queen, and we have her established there, and everything seems to be going good. And the king seems to love her, and everything's going great. Well, chapters 3 through 8, we have the plot of Haman. Haman hates the Jews. He wants them destroyed. He tricks the king into passing a law that basically on a certain day, we can just go in and wipe out the Jews. Well, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, that's a little phrase that you'll hear. Once that law was passed, it could not be rescinded. It could not be vetoed. It was set in stone. It could not change. So Haman tricks him to doing this, and it's up to Esther to stop it. And Esther makes a bold move, reveals herself to the king, her nationality, and basically says, look, you know, my people, me, even myself, will be killed by this. Well, the king realizes what's been done. Haman is actually hanged on the gallows that he had prepared to hang Mordecai, the Jew that he hated. This wonderful story. This is just great story. You can't write fiction better than the true story, the true history that takes place in the book of Esther. But Haman is eventually killed. Because the law cannot be rescinded, they basically add on a new law that says, hey, yes, you can go and attack the Jews on this date, but guess what? They can defend themselves. So when the day comes, those that still try to attack them are defeated by the Jews. And as a remembrance of God's deliverance, a new feast is established, the Feast of Purim. And it talks about that in chapter 9, and really we throw chapter 10 in there too. Chapter 10 is a whopping 3 verses and talks about how Mordecai basically becomes prime minister under King Ahasuerus. The key event to remember is chapter 7, and that's how the plot against the Jews is foiled. And as I say, the Book of Esther is such a tremendous story. It's been made into movies and stuff, and people have even taken and written, you know, like a fictionalized, you know, book version of it. But just a wonderful, tremendous story. It's one of the greatest stories in the Bible, is how God works through Esther and Mordecai to save the nation of Israel. So, there we go. We have wrapped up the 12 historical books, and not too long. We're slightly over an hour. I am very pleased that this did not go to like 2 hours. We've covered a lot of ground. I was very nervous about doing this, and as I kind of rushed, I've got a few little things I'll try to get fixed in the notes before I get them put up. In fact, I do have the notes up as we're doing this. I haven't got this section up, but I have been trying to put the notes up. I didn't. It won't be in the podcast feed, so you won't see it in iTunes or anything. But if you go to the website, go to thebaptistbasics.org, click on podcast, go to BBU, you will see a link under the Bible survey section for the notes. And it says that they are incomplete because as I'm just doing this as I go along. You'll see the sections and the outline we're going to use of the course. But, I don't have the individual course or lesson outlines done. I'm just doing them and preparing them before I do it. So, I was actually preparing these notes, trying to wrap them up moments before I started recording. So a few little things there kind of slipped through a few of the dates. I'll try to get that corrected so that at least the notes will be right. So, you can check that out later and get a hold of those. Well, anyway, that's the historical books. We've covered, about a millennium worth of history and covered a lot of ground from Joshua to Judges, to Kings, to captivity, to reestablishing the Jewish people, and basically covering the history of the Old Testament in the process. So, I'm glad you've listened. I'm glad you stuck with me to hear me as I am speaking right now. If you have, that you've stuck with me for over an hour of rambling through these books, I appreciate it. I hope that this has been a help to help you understand what's going on, to give you an idea of what the Bible is about and what these books are about. Give you, if anything else, give you a good historical perspective on these books, where they, what's happening, what's taking place, and where they fit into the history of the Bible. Well, let's wrap this up. I appreciate you listening today. Check out Baptist Basics for more resources, the other podcasts, different articles have been written. One thing I will note, I will try to do, you can look up and find some different outlines of the Kings. I'm going to try to find something or put something together and put it as an appendix onto these lessons. I'm not guaranteeing I will, but I'm going to try to if I get some time to do it and outline the different kings and when they ruled, just to give you a reference for, you know, what was ruling, what was taking place, maybe even during that time, or just some dates so you have an outline of the kings of Judah and Israel and you know how they fit in chronological order. So anyway, I'm gonna try to do that if Lord willing, if I have time. But anyway, check out the other resources, BaptistBasics.org. You can email me, podcast@BaptistBasics.org is the special email for the podcast. I'd appreciate listening to you. Once again, I'll ask you, if you do use iTunes, I would appreciate a review in iTunes. It just kind of helps with the search and rankings of the podcast. I would greatly appreciate if you would take the time to do that. And I guess that's it. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today, and I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you.